Needham, Massachusetts, the town where my family and I have lived for more than 25 years, is currently celebrating its 300th anniversary. On Sunday, one of the events connected with that celebration drew me to the same field where my daughters used to play soccer pretty well, and where I used to coach it badly. In the center of the field, half a dozen men were taping together several thin rectangular concrete slabs. One of the men, Raja Tumla, who came to the U.S. from India 13 years ago, explained that he and the other fellows were trying to render the soccer field temporarily fit for cricket.
The cricket pitch usually needs a 22 yards and 6 feet wide surface, which is hard. No grass, and it should be hard enough so that the ball pitches and bounces.
The efforts of Raja Tumla and his colleagues were earnest, but he wasn't promising success.
You can see, like, the ball is not bouncing as much as we like. We probably need more nails and fix it to the ground.
I'd seen film of cricket matches and even part of a live match once near London, so I understood that the fellow called the bowler needed a hard surface off which he could deliver the ball on the bounce to the fellow who would try to hit it. What I didn't understand immediately was why anybody needed to render this soccer field, which incidentally has always been known as Cricket Field, fit for cricket. For an explanation, I turned to Charlie Wright, the man responsible for the attempt at transformation. He began his explanation at the beginning.
Cricket, predominantly being an English sport and invented in England in the 1600s, the early ancestors of Needham were all of English descent, and they brought the game, and they had other pitches in town too, but this is the only one that's actually stayed and kept the name Cricket Field.
Cricket was so successfully transplanted that for a time, Needham Heights was known as the cricket capital of Massachusetts. Those days, as Charlie Wright acknowledged, are long gone, but no less worth recalling for that.
This is like rare. They never hear any fields called cricket anymore. Majority of the residents and new residents in Needham still think it's named after the insect.
Once Wright and his colleagues on the committee planning the commemoration of Needham's 300th birthday decided that a cricket match should be part of the fun, all they had to do was find two cricket teams. Wright discovered the existence of a cricket league operating in Massachusetts and Rhode Island, and, well, here's how he introduced the two sides as they prepared to play Sunday afternoon.
One of the largest cricket clubs in the country, Boston, Gymkhana in red.
Yeah.
And in blue, the New England Royals.
Which team bats first is customarily decided by a coin toss. And once a coin had been located, selectman Dan Matthews tossed it.
Heads it is.
Will Field.
Congratulations.
Will Field.
The New England Royals won. They will field first.
At that point, it seemed to me that, in at least one respect, cricket must be similar to baseball. Sure, the former only has two bases, whereas the latter has four, and sure, in cricket there seems to be no such thing as foul territory, and nobody in baseball is called left silly leg, but in both games, the team fielding first and hence batting last has an advantage. By the time Gymkhana and the Royals were set to begin play, a crowd of perhaps 100 people had gathered on the grass around the pitch. I asked Raja Tumla how many people a regular league game might draw.
Not much. If it's a good Sunday, we can count on like 30, 40 people. Not more than that.
So it's for love.
Yeah, it's for the love of the game, yeah, absolutely.
So Sunday's game could boast a better-than-average turnout, at least by Gymkhana Club standards. But how much did the people on these sidelines know about what they were watching? If Needham resident Cliff Hayden was representative, not much.
No, I know nothing about the sport, so I'm just going to learn and watch and enjoy and see what it's like. I've read a few of these, you know, English novels, and so, you know, I sort of know the story of cricket a little bit, but I've never actually watched a game in action, so that'll be fun.
And Cliff Hayden was right. It was fun, albeit sometimes a little mysterious.
Batsman had stepped out of the crease, so the wicketkeeper tried to dislodge the bales before he came back, but didn't succeed.
I don't know a bale from a wicket, but even I could see from the scoreboard that this game had become hopelessly lopsided. I mentioned that unfortunate circumstance to one of the Gymkhana players who was helping the guy with a bullhorn to explain what was happening.
It's 24 to nothing.
Yes.
This is terrible. Is 24 to nothing a big deal, or is this just...
No, it's a very good start. So we have our first loss, so you jinxed us.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, it's okay.
That's four runs, straight drive, crosses the boundary on a bounce. A ball that crosses the boundary without bouncing is like a home run in baseball, would be six runs.
The bowling, batting, and wicket-keeping went on throughout the afternoon. Some cricket matches are designed to go on for days, and some end without a result. This one lasted a matter of hours, and the result would be close. Gymkhana 101, New England Royals 100. As the game was winding down, I asked Sai Yamada of the winning side whether all the Gymkhana players were from India.
Yes, almost. We have a couple of people from Australia, and most of them are from India, but last season we had a guy from England, so both Australia and England are cricket-playing nations. But occasionally we have some people from, you know, Caribbean, which is closer to West Indies. West Indies is, you know, another cricket-playing team. So those guys come in, they play pretty good cricket.
I wondered if there were no players in the league who didn't come from cricket-playing nations because prospective players born in the U.S. had too many other sports from which to choose.
Yeah, and also there's no business yet in cricket in this part of the country. You know, in India, there are like 2 billion people watching cricket. But here, the audience is less, so sponsors are less, and the game has to become more popular in order to get there.
It was impossible to tell whether Sunday's contest resulted in any progress along that line, but the two teams put on a fine display of the game under circumstances that must have been challenging, a pitch they'd had to cobble together with tape and nails, and an audience that had very little idea of when to cheer. Still, it seemed safe to assume that Charlie Wright and the rest of the people who'd organized the match were probably pleased. On the occasion of the town's 300th birthday, they'd managed to arrange the recreation of a bit of Needham's history, even if it hadn't involved anybody who was English, and some number of the citizens who dropped by to watch probably understand now that Cricket Field wasn't named after an insect. Only a Game is produced by Karen Given and Doug Trabu. Our technical director is John Perotti. Our intern is Jillian Guybe. Our senior producer is Gary Wallach. We had help from Hillary McQuilkin. This week, Doug and John did most of the work. To view my photographic exploration of the mysteries of cricket on Cricket Field and learn more about this week's music selections, please visit our website, onlyagame.org. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at onlyagameradio. Our final word comes from the sideline of that cricket match where the mother of a 3.5-month-old spectator named Timmy charted her son's future.
And Timmy is going to play cricket and rugby and Aussie rules and all of them.
Ah, just another traditional three-sport athlete. I'm Bill Littlefield. Thanks for listening. I'll see you next week.
Support comes from the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live healthy, productive lives at gatesfoundation.org. And the William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people online at wtgrantfoundation.org. This is NPR.